And welcome in. It's a special breaking news edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. The Steve Wojciechowski era is over. This was supposed to be Monday's show, and it wasn't supposed to include the news that Wojo had actually gotten fired, but here we are. The original intent of this show, which was going to move on Monday, was to highlight the utter dismantling of the facade of the Steve Wojciechowski tenure at Marquette. And when I say the dismantling of the facade, it was by a group of people who passionately love Marquette basketball, and they did it in a way that was in no way personal. It was a masterful look at how you use statistics along with analysis to come to the conclusion that everyone collectively came to, including ultimately really the only guy that mattered, and that was the athletics director at Marquette University, Bill Scholl. And nobody saw this one coming, because you figured that if Steve Wojciechowski was going to get let go, it was going to be maybe the day after Selection Sunday. Nobody knew, or nobody thought, that Marquette was going to go to the NCAA tournament. The only way that they were going to get to the big dance is if a slew of teams dropped out because of COVID protocols. Obviously, that didn't happen. So on Friday afternoon, now it wasn't a 4:55 Friday afternoon take out the trash dump, but it was early on Friday afternoon. Bill Scholl, VP and Director of Athletics, just releasing this statement. I will read it in its entirety. Marquette announces change in leadership of men's basketball program, the statement from Bill Scholl reads. After a thorough evaluation of our program over the last week, which included multiple conversations with Steve, I concluded that now is the right time for a new leader of our storied program. I'm confident that our history of success and our commitment to developing young men who are leaders on and off the court will attract the highest caliber of coaching talent. I want to thank Steve for his dedication to our student athletes and for how he represented our men's basketball program and the university. We wish Steve, Lindsay, Jack, and Charlie nothing but the best in the future. That from Bill Scholl, Vice President and Director of Athletics. At the end of the day, Steve Wojciechowski just didn't win enough. He's a good man. I think he's a good coach, but I don't think that he was a good enough head coach for a program whose expectations are what Marquette's expectations rightfully are. Because when you look at what Marquette has, so many assets, a great facility to play your games in, a great facility in which to practice in, where your offices and meeting rooms are, a world-class university, a basketball-first institution, and a basketball-first conference in the Big East. There are so many assets. You've got history in the Marquette program. You've got guys like Al McGuire, who won a national championship, Doc Rivers, right now, who's coaching the best team in the Eastern Conference, at least record-wise, in the Philadelphia 76ers, someone who is a perennial all-star as a player and someone who has a ring as a head coach in the NBA. Dwayne Wade, one of the most electrifying players in the NBA of the last 20 years. So there's history at Marquette. There's a lot. If you're a Marquette fan, there's a lot to be proud of. But Marquette just didn't win enough during the Steve Wojciechowski era. Wojo finishes with a 128-95 record, but far more damning were the late season collapses. Under Wojo, Marquette was a non-factor in the month of March. They went 0-2 in the NCAA tournament and just 4-6 in the Big East tournament. The last three seasons have ended with fans and talking heads like me asking, how much longer can this sustain itself? 2 years ago, they missed a chance to win the conference by losing four straight games to end the regular season. They followed that up with a blowout loss to Ja Morant and Murray State in the NCAA tournament. That was followed up a month later when the Housers left. Out of nowhere, or at least so it seemed. Sam and Joey, you know what? We are not the future of this program anymore. We're out. A year ago, with the program's all-time leading scorer in Marcus Howard, MU collapsed down the stretch again, losing six out of their last seven games. They were probably headed to the NCAAs, but the beginning of the pandemic ended the tournament before it began. But still, the collapse was concerning, but the pandemic left Wojo off the hook. This year was a roller coaster. The Golden Eagles got a couple of top 10 wins in December, but again, they had a run where they lost six out of seven in a stretch. They did finish strong, though. Marquette finished with three wins in their last four to finish the regular season. They beat North Carolina. And then, when they get to New York City, when they get to the Big East tournament, they just got punched in the face repeatedly by Georgetown. Now, granted, Georgetown had a magical run, and they wound up winning the whole damn thing in New York City. But Marquette scored 14 points in the first half. That's putrid. Going inside some more of the numbers. Since starting the conference season in 2018-2019, they started out 12-2 in the Big East. Since that point, Marquette, under Steve Wojciechowski, just 16-25 in conference games. The Golden Eagles, ninth in the 11-team Big East this season. Most damningly, overall, over the course of the 7 years of the Steve Wojciechowski era, his conference record was just 59-68. Bottom line, that's not going to cut it. I tweeted this out earlier this week because it was one of the most remarkable pieces of journalism, especially from a fan blog, but irrespective of that, one of the most remarkable pieces of journalism that I've read in a long time, when you analytically, without bias, but just going through the math, you go through why someone needs to go and why there is a change that needs to be made. And it was written by the writers and editors of the three major Marquette fan blogs, Cracked Sidewalks, Anonymous Eagle, and Paint Touches. And this is how it begins, and it begins with an editor's note. For the first time in over a decade of existence, Cracked Sidewalks, Anonymous Eagle, and Paint Touches have united to create and publish a post concurrently. We have seen enough. That's the editor's note. And then the article begins with the two paragraphs that kind of set up everything else that flows from there. And I would encourage every Marquette fan, and by the way, every journalism student, to go read this thing in its entirety. We'll link it up in our social media accounts at Doug Russell Pod on both Twitter and on Instagram as well. But these are the first two graphs that kind of set up the whole thing. This article serves as a consensus among the three longest standing Marquette blogs regarding Steve Wojciechowski as Marquette University's head men's basketball coach. Wojciechowski has proven incapable of succeeding as Marquette's head men's basketball coach. There is nothing in his record or the underlying statistics to indicate that he will be able to meet or exceed the expectations commonly associated with success at Marquette. There is ample evidence to indicate that while he may be able to recruit talent to Marquette, he will continue to underachieve. The Wojo tax is real. The sum is less than the parts. That's how it begins. Joining me now on the podcast, he was one of the contributors of this statistically based critique and conclusion that Steve Wojciechowski had to go. Although, again, this is a piece that moved several days ago. The news dropped as I sit here recording this afternoon, on Friday afternoon. But it was a statistically based critique and conclusion that the Steve Wojciechowski era had to end. Joining me from Paint Touches is Andre Greska. Andre, it's a busy day during a busy time. Thanks so much for carving out some time for me today.
No problem. Thanks for having me. And you're right. It was busy out of nowhere. Like, I was imagining a nice day of watching NCAA tournament and working, and all of a sudden, everything's blown up at once.
Yeah, no doubt. And I do have to say this before we get started. I contacted you to talk about this. This was supposed to be the Monday show instead of the Friday night show going into Saturday and Sunday, because I didn't think we were going to have this breaking news. And when I first contacted you, it was going to be about what do you think is going to possibly happen. And then, what was it, less than an hour later, here we go. The release from Bill Scholl's office came, and our discussion became a little bit different.
Like I said, I think everyone was caught off guard. I don't think anyone from the national media down to the fan blogs to whoever you, unless you were in the AL for the decision, I don't think this was foreseen.
All right. Well, again, you start, and before we get started about some of the statistical analysis that you guys went to, tell me about the process. What was the impetus for the first time, Crack Sidewalks, Anonymous Eagle, and your site, Paint Touches, coming together for this statistically based article?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. So we have a chat group sometimes during the season. And I say sometimes because it could go dormant for a couple months. And, you know, just sometimes chat groups are busy, sometimes they're not. But this year in particular have been quite active, just a lot of frustration. And we're cognizant that, we're not huge names, but in terms of what we represent, we don't want to be putting anything that's malicious or hurtful. So some of the more cutting-edge remarks that kind of you want to vent out but don't want people to see. So we have this group, and again, it was just a Twitter group and nothing special. I'm sure everyone has plenty of those. And Rob Lowe from Crack Sidewalks a couple weeks ago actually brought up the idea. So it was his primary idea to kind of join forces. He's like, hey, we have this group. We obviously get along and we have a relatively similar state of mind in terms of the state of the program. What if we combine to do a joint venture in terms of an article that we're going to publish on all three sites simultaneously, we'll work collaboratively on, and kind of really emphasize the point that it's not like a sour fan or a sour blog. It's a collection of things that have driven the program to a point where three separately run entities kind of can come together and do it. And so that was a couple weeks ago, and you know, like any group project, nothing really gets done sure. till the last minute. So I think he took the big chunk of the first cut, and then from there there's about six or seven of us that were just kind of like tinkering and tweaking, and I think that ended up helping a lot. Because one of the things we want, like I said, we want to be cognizant of is that we, even though we are fans, we didn't want to sound like this was a meatball fan, like saying, fire the coach, hire this guy, you know, because we see enough of that on Twitter already. And we've never really been about kind of being reactive. We wanted to be analytical with this. And most of our time was spent kind of slicing and dicing data of, okay, this makes sense here, this might not make sense. So I would say we probably shaved off another like 1,000 to 2,000 words through the editing processes. But it would be just like that. So someone would work on it, and then another night someone would go in and change something, and we all have jobs. Like, this is not something we do for money, or this is just our side hustle, our fun time. And it got to the point where we wanted to get it out once Monday came around. So that was it was a big day in terms of college basketball news, because every other coach basically that was on the hot seat was getting fired that day. There was a buyout for Archie Miller. There was firing of Richard Pitino. So we were like, okay, we know nothing's going to happen, but we should probably time it for this week where we can try to we have the focus of the national media. Everyone's looking, oh, coaching carousel, this right before the NCAA tournament. And so we wanted to do like a Tuesday or Wednesday release. And like I said, like a group project, like any good project, we kind of get pushback. So finally, we got to a point where we wanted to be. And at that point, I reached out to the administration, because we do, like, even though we're not like an official partner, or obviously we're not an official partner, even though we're not an official like outlet or sort of journalistic enterprise, we like I said, we try to stay professional. We try to keep it on the up and up. And I was just like, I told them, hey, we are going, I'm planning to write this. Can I get a comment on the state of Marquette in the state of Wojo, his tenure? And very kindly, Bill gave me some time in terms of he gave me a phone call and he followed up with an email as well. So we got their input. But to bring it back to the beginning, this was really just a way for us to kind of use our collective voice and try to put a little bit of pressure. And that's it. Put a little bit of pressure on not accepting what has been the current baseline at Marquette.
I tell you what, if you guys don't do this for a living, I've been at this a long time, Andre. This was one of the best researched pieces, no matter what the subject matter is, that I recall ever reading. So public tip of the cap to you guys. I put it out there on Twitter as well when I first read this. This was well researched. It was meticulous. You've got graphs. I can't believe you shaved another 1,000 words off of this thing. I can't imagine what it would have looked like if you hadn't shaved the 1,000 words off of that. You reached out to the administration. You checked every box that every reporter should do. So hats off to all of you guys. This was a great piece.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I mean, to go one level further, one of the contributors to Crack Sidewalks actually works in PR for a living. So he cleaned up a lot of our language that was unprofessional. So it was PR ready. Yes, it was quite, like I said, we wanted to button everything up. So obviously we know not everyone's going to agree. We didn't expect anything to happen out of it. But what we wanted to make sure we came across is that if you have an issue, like, just bring some numbers. If I'm measuring by this benchmark and you're actually saying this benchmark isn't right, so tell me where you want it to be. And that's kind of what it takes a little bit of time to put together, but I think it worked out. So far, our collective tweets have garnered about 15,000 page views, which is, again, fan blogs with no real mass media presence. It has been collectively impressive on our part in terms of what we expected. We did not expect that kind of reaction. And over 185,000 impressions on Twitter from people seeing the tweets and people like you retweeting our content. So yeah, it's been very, very surprisingly positive before today. Like, even if nothing would have happened, we were happy with how it kind of came together.
So what's your background then? Obviously, you went to Marquette. We were talking a little bit before I hit record on the tape player, digital tape player as if we really still have tape players. But what is your era of Marquette basketball? Were you, you know, Kevin O'Neill, Mike Dean, Wojo, Bob Duquette? Where were you at?
Personally, I am a Buzz guy, so 2008 to 2012, and okay, pretty much the heyday of modern Marquette, I would say, with a couple Sweet 16 runs, and obviously right after the Elite Eight run in 2013. So that's where I cut my teeth, and that's kind of what I set as a baseline, because when Marquette was reaching these goals, obviously under a different administration, it was in the Big East. So not that anything's wrong with the Big East, we love the conference now, but this was in the best conference of all time sort of thing, where you're getting a couple number one seeds and 11 teams are making the tournament. So from my state of mind, if you can succeed at this level with this level of resources during this peak era, then I don't think it should be positive, or it should be possible to accept the current level during this era. And then that's where it's not so nice, where you have a couple of different age groups within this group. So I'm in the younger subset of this group. There's a couple that are in the Korean era. They were around the Final Four, and there's actually a few that were pre-Korean as well. So you get a good mindset into that. It's not just what you've experienced, it's what these other people have experienced with you in terms of MU being a collective experience, and then kind of being able to tie it to today, where you're not going to, like I said, you're not going to be happy with a sixth place finish and a number nine seed on a rolling basis. If that's your baseline, then either the investment in the program has to go down because it's not worth it, or something else has to change.
As far as the article itself, I want to dive into that for a couple of minutes. Where did you start? What was the original thesis comparing this era to that era versus this era versus that era? How did you meticulously go through all of the data to make all of your points?
We just started with one draft, again, by Rob on Google Sheets, and it was basically, he is a numbers wizard. I'm not sure if the larger MU fan base is familiar with him. So he's part of Crack Sidewalks, but he's been on advanced analytics since the mid 2000s. So he has been kind of one of my, it's fun like working with someone like that, someone that you look up to. So he has all these Google Sheets for himself that he just keeps track. So he wrote the first draft, and he's like, okay, I'm sharing this with you guys. This is what I have. And kind of what we wanted to get at is, what are the expectations and where are we landing? So that was the first thing that we started with. And then the other one was, okay, so then where are the issues? Because a lot of the times when fans talk, like it's easy to say, oh, this isn't good enough. But then when you try to drill into why it's not good enough, then it becomes a little bit more of a chore to try to find some of that data. And so we went through a bunch of different phases of it, and we kind of landed on the the player development in terms of defense, because defense has been one of the sticking points under Wojo's under the previous administration for Wojo, where it just seems like no matter who is coming in, the level of defense doesn't match what you need to be at to succeed, particularly when the offense doesn't have Marcus Howard with it. So that's where we kind of started with those 2 points of, okay, what are the expectations for the program? Where are we at according to those expectations? And then what has been the development of players and some of the inefficiencies that we've seen in terms of lineups? And that's where, again, having these different outlets come together helps, because I've written about this a couple dozens of times. Like, we're not using the appropriate pairings together, and it kind of started with Andrew Rousey and Marcus Howard. Again, two of the most fun players you'll ever watch on offense. Couldn't stop my grandma on defense, and that's fine. That's fine. If it was a cognizant choice by the staff that we're going to outscore people, and it almost worked. I mean, it made it to NIT, but it wasn't optimal. That there was different ways. So it's, again, easy to say that from the comfort of my couch or whatever. But what we then extrapolate from there is, okay, if we can see this, we don't have any of these advanced technologies, like we're working off a spreadsheet and Twitter DMs, like, why does it keep happening? And that's the thing. It wasn't a one-year blip. It wasn't just because this year was sub 500. It wasn't just because we didn't make the NCAA tournament. It is a years-long trend that kind of culminated in this, and we hadn't seen any real sort of improvement or movement.
Was there a final straw for you and your collaborators on this? Because, again, last year, I don't know if Wojo got a reprieve. I asked Mike DeCourcy, who I'm sure you're familiar with from the Sporting News and the Big Ten Network. I asked him how many coaches did he think got a reprieve because of the pandemic that we're hopefully getting out of sooner rather than later. And he just kind of chuckled and said, a lot. And he wouldn't give me any specific names, but I kind of think that Steve Wojciechowski might have been one of them, considering how the last two seasons before this year, but, you know, losing six out of your last seven games, not going far in the Big East tournament, not winning a game, a single game in the NCAA tournament. Was there a point of no return for you and your collaborators on this project and your conclusion?
There were a couple, so some had already jumped off board. So Rob had been off before this year. He was like, I'm done. I've seen enough. You know how the political thing goes. I've seen enough. So he was off the bandwagon this year. For me, I was actually going to start the year writing Wojo deserves another year, because that's the kind of mindset I had in, where I try to look at it and I kind of not make excuses, but kind of see where the rationale is. And it was in 2019 that I DM'd someone, and I bring it up in the open because I've tweeted out like so many times. People are like, all right, this story again. But it kind of hit me in July, so a couple months after the Hausers transferred, that Wojo is not going to feel any sort of pressure to succeed until at least 2022, because this year he has Marcus Howard, and they're going to use we lost the Hausers. We were supposed to be a top 10 team. It kind of shook up our team at the last moment, which it was exactly what happened. The following year, which is this particular season, is, well, we lost Marcus. It's a rebuilding year, which is, again, exactly what happened. So then this 2022 would finally be, okay, we're past this and we're past that. Now we have to show our cards. For me, the straw, I think, was losing to DePaul at home. I think that's when I finally was like, you know what? That's it. And again, I try to maintain, is not that I'm unbiased. I'm obviously very biased. I'm a Marquette fan blog. But I don't want us to be one of those guys that's constantly like negative and harping against this and that. So I've actually written very little this year. I've only written once before this since January, because it just felt like there was nothing positive I could say. And when they lost to DePaul at home, a team that had only kept it within five single digits against like two or three opponents all year, that had a very shortened season because of a long COVID pause, a must-win game where you were favored by almost double-digit points, there's just no excuses at that point. DePaul is at a level where if you're consistently losing to them, you don't deserve to be there. And that's when I finally hit the eject button. I'm like, okay, time to go. But yeah, I think it'll depend by the person. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think I was one of the last ones, to be honest.
Well, this was a team that beat two ranked teams in December. I have to think that guys like you that were some of the last ones that were on board with enough is enough, which is kind of how the article begins on your sites. I mean, you started off the season, Marquette did pretty well. There had to be some optimism at that point.
Yeah, I mean, they exceeded. It's funny if someone wants to dig up old tweets, like, oh, really? This is what you were saying about the team back in December. And that's exactly the point. If the excuse was, well, they had a COVID pause at the beginning of the year. They obviously didn't practice all off season. They had a lot of new faces. If that would have resulted in a slow start, it would have been completely understandable. Like, my personal expectations were for a bottom tier Big East finish in around 70 or 80 in terms of KenPom ratings, which is about where they ended up. But once you saw the talent, the natural talent, how it fit together, it becomes much more difficult to accept the mediocrity because you've tasted it. Now you know what they can do. They can beat Wisconsin at home. They can overtake Creighton on the road. I think, to be honest, those wins probably were more harmful for the long-term tenure of Wojo than if he would have lost, because then it's not a talent issue like everyone expected. Like, everyone expected there to not be enough talent. Everyone's too young. It'll take some time. But the inconsistency that the team showed, and that is the exact word that Athletic Director Bill Scholl used in our phone conversation, the inconsistency was the thing that was most baffling. You just had no idea what the team was going to be. So, yes, they could go into North Carolina and beat a top 25 UNC team and do it pretty handily, and then the next day they're going to get blown out by 20 to UConn. And it's not like anyone didn't see that coming. After the game, everyone was super pumped, super excited, and like, okay, well, the letdown is coming. It's just a matter of time. So, the fact that the talent was there to beat teams early before the team mesh, and the fact that the team got worse as the season progressed, in worse not as in a visual aspect, but as in a metrics aspect, Wojo hit his highest KenPom rating for Marquette in his tenure this year. It was in the mid-20s, which is, again, isn't great. That's not something we're going to hang a banner for. But he ended the year at 80. So what happened between the start of the season and now? Why wasn't there this development of the team? There was no other COVID stops. There was plenty of time to practice. That's the kind of stuff that when it hit the DePaul game, I was like, all right, that's it.
You look at some of the assets that Marquette basketball brings to the table. Number one, you've got great facilities, not just Fiserv Forum, which may be the best basketball arena in the world. Certainly, I would put it in the top 10 at this point. You've got the Al McGuire Center, which is a marvelous on-campus facility. It's a basketball-first school. It's an incredible academic institution. It's a wonderful university. It's got history. They invest in the program, and it's in a basketball conference. Now, the conferences are cyclical. One year, the ACC is the best in the country. This year, it was the Big Ten. Some years, I suspect it's going to be the Big East once again. So it's in a great conference. What are the expectations, the realistic expectations of fans like yourself and your co-contributors to this project?
We talked about this a lot because that is huge. Like, you don't want to come off and someone saying, well, what do you expect, a Final Four every year? We're not Kentucky. We're not a blue blood. And that's true. But I think at the level of success that was set as a baseline from the mid-2000s to the mid-2010s, I think in a tournament 3 out of 4 years, so basically giving you a year to rebuild should something happen, it makes sense. So you want to have probably a couple protected seeds. I'm not saying you're going to be a top four seed each of those 3 years. There's definitely a ramp up period. But consistent top half of the Big East, outside of whatever happens in March, which does matter. I'm not going to lie and say, well, if you do all this and you can't win in March, people aren't ever going to love you or whatever. But top half of the Big East, and that was another point that we made in the article, and something I've kind of been hitting on lately too, that right now you mentioned all of the positives from Marquette, and it's undeniably like very, very good place for a coach that has like grand aspirations, because you have all of these resources, all of this history, all of this money being put in, and it doesn't have Indiana level expectations. Like, if you make a couple Sweet 16s and if you finish in the top half of the Big East for most years, like, you're going to have job security as long as you want it, and you're going to have a good chance to move up, as Tom Crean showed. As well, Buzz Williams didn't really move up, he moved laterally, but I mean, we digress. So from an expectation standpoint, I think being in the top third of the Big East with a Big East tournament run in every couple of years, I think that's both obtainable and a an attainable barometer of what we can measure a future coach against.
Speaking of future coaches, I suspect that maybe one of the next collaborations that you guys might have might be, if you're going to do another one,
yeah,
might
they
be...
jumped our gun. We were going to run that on Tuesday, and it's like, all right, well, what do we do now?
What qualities are you looking for in the next head coach of the Marquette Golden Eagles?
Yeah, this is a tougher one when you're talking about collaborations, because now we're digging less into like numbers that are tougher to argue against, to more of like preferences. And one of the things we've kind of almost all hit on is it has to be a head coach. So Marquette has had a ton of success with assistant coaches jumping up a level. So obviously Tom Crean was an assistant, became a head coach. Buzz Williams was an assistant, became a head coach. It was not a bad hire when you're saying, oh, why would we hire an assistant coach? Because obviously it has worked in the past. But I think Marquette is at a level right now where if you're kind of gambling on someone who doesn't have head coaching experience, you're putting yourself in a situation where you're not just having a bad run under one coach. Now you're having multiple bad runs under multiple coaches. So now you're not just in a rut. You're actually like you're in the gutter. You're going down, and now it's you can't just blame one person for it. So I think that limits the possibilities. Again, I think I don't have any sources. This is not me trying to say that I know any better than anyone else. But in my opinion, and in some of the conversations that we have had, having that head coaching experience will matter greatly. And then the other side of the coin, and again, this is a little bit more preference-wise, but a couple of us hit on this, is that if you're going to hire someone that doesn't have experience at a high major level, which is most likely the case, like Marquette somehow found money for Wojo's removal, which we didn't think was there, they're probably not going to find a ton more under the couch cushions of the big donors to buy someone out. So if you're looking at someone that's in the mid-major level, they have to have had success that puts their program that they were at outside of the norm. That's where I think there's a big opportunity, because now we have so many freely available stats. Obviously, they'll do a ton of research. They will look outside of just KenPom numbers. But when you're talking about someone like Craig Smith at Utah State, which is one of the people that I think a lot of people have been focusing on, a name that is very hot. Obviously, they lost today in the tournament, but that doesn't diminish what he's done. But someone like Craig Smith.
It makes him available.
Yeah, it does make him. Yeah, talk him a little sooner. Hey, hit up his agent tomorrow. But what he did is not that Utah State is a bad program. They're a great mid-major. Obviously, Morrill had that program at one of the top levels, but they had a bad hire, and you see exactly what happens when you have a bad hire. But right away, without having to wait or get his guys, he was able to take the core of what was left and build a top 50 team. Just the first year, and then he did it again, so it wasn't a fluke. So as you're looking, as we're looking into, okay, what makes sense, you have to be reasonable. They're probably not going to be able to buy out a Nate Oates or a Shaka Smart. They're probably not going to be able to lure someone that has been having success at a high major level. So if you're looking at the mid-major tiers, it's easy to make the wrong hire, because winning at XYZ is not the same as winning at a high major XYZ. And that's kind of where we identify some opportunity if you're able to turn around a team quickly.
Well, I know you don't do media full time. What do you do for a living? Because you could do this. I'm just telling you that right now. This has been a great conversation.
No, I mean, in my own head, I do. But yeah, I have training. I was a journalism major at Marquette. I worked for Fox Sports Wisconsin for a little bit. But right now I'm in marketing. I'm a solutions marketing manager. So kind of do this on the side to keep me sane. But it is fun. Obviously, the topic itself isn't fun, but it's fun to do. And when I do get a chance to kind of talk to you or talk to some of the outlets that have wanted to reach out to Paint Touches in the past, it's great, because it's an opportunity to kind of show some of these to talk to some of these people. If I talk to my wife, it's one thing. She likes basketball. She'll watch it with me. Obviously, she falls out of bracket. But once I start talking offensive rebounding percentage, her eyes roll, and she's like, "All right."
Did she go to Marquette too? Did you meet her there?
We're high school sweethearts, so she went to went to Western Illinois. We're big Leatherneck fans here too. But but she's a Marquette at heart. I took her to enough games where she calls herself an honorary alumni.
There you go. Well, follow Andre Greska at Paint Touches, and then obviously on his own Twitter feed as well, Andre with an I, Greska. You just got two more follows, so there's that. You'll get another one from my podcast account as well. Check out the article, guys, if you haven't had a chance to. I've retweeted it. You can find it on Paint Touches. You can find it on Andre, again, A-N-D-R-E-I-G-R-E-S-K-A, Andre Greska on Twitter. It's posted there as well. It's a good thing you published it before he got fired, because I can't imagine all of that work going for naught if it would have been published like tomorrow.
I was dread, like, it was a joke between us, like, you know they're gonna fire him just to spite us. And it was like, wait, oh, we were so close to missing our deadline. That would have been awful.
That would have been terrible. Andre, I appreciate the time. Again, great work by you and your collaborators. It is a great read. Not a fun read, and I know it wasn't fun for you guys to put together, but it was really well done, meticulous. And again, there was nothing personal about it, but you can't refute facts. And you guys brought a lot of facts to it, and I appreciate the article and the time today.
We appreciate your promotion. We appreciate having me on.
Thanks, Andre. There he goes. Andre Greska from Paint Touches here on the Doug Russell Podcast. So as we look back at the Steve Wojciechowski era, sometimes it's instructive to go back to the beginning. Someone tweeted at me today something that I completely forgot about, but did remind me that I sat down with Coach Wojo about 6 weeks or so after he had been hired. I sat down with him in his office at the Al McGuire Center. Welcome to Milwaukee. How has it gone, the transition so far for you and your family?
The transition's been great. The people here have been amazing. And that's the thing, when everybody asks how it's going, that's the thing that's really stood out to me. Obviously, the people at Marquette have been amazing in how they've embraced me and helped me in the transition. And then the city of Milwaukee, you know, it's a great place. My family and I are very excited to be here.
What did you know about Milwaukee before you got here? What did you know about Marquette University before you got here?
Well, Milwaukee, I had been to a few times for recruiting, and that was really the extent of it. I never had a chance to have a deep dive, although I did talk to J.J. Redick, before I took the job, because he was here with the Bucks for a short period, and you know, he just raved about the city. So, and I take his word as good. In terms of Marquette, you know, I've always recognized Marquette basketball as one of the great brands in college basketball. I mean, there's amazing tradition and history. The guys who've coached here, the guys who have worn the jersey over decades, have created a standard of excellence. And you know, I'm very proud to be the caretaker of the program now.
17 years at Duke as a player, assistant coach, half of your life spent with Mike Krzyzewski. What have you learned from him? I don't know if you can contain that all within the confines of a radio interview, but what are some of the highlights of what you've learned from him that you can take into this job, your first head coaching job?
The value of strong and truthful relationships. I think it all starts with that. I can remember him coming into my home when I was 17 years old, and it really all started with that. It started with a relationship, and everything builds from that area. Obviously, his preparation, his competitiveness, and his knowledge of the game are as good as it's ever been. But the thing I think that I appreciate the most about Coach is his ability to invest in people and develop strong and lasting relationships.
How much did you consult him, talk to him before taking this job and this whole off-season journey, where I'm sure you had a number of different suitors that were inquiring about whether or not you'd like to lead their program?
You know, I consulted him every day. I mean, he's one of the closest people to me in my life, and he's one of the guys I talk to anytime there's a big decision going on in my life. And, you know, he had amazing things to say about Marquette and the type of fit he thought it would be for me. He's been a fan of the program and the program's history. Growing up in Chicago, he got to see it even closer as somebody from this area. And, he was a huge resource for me in making the decision.
What's similar and what's dissimilar when you compare Marquette University to Duke University? What did you see in Marquette that reminded you of where you came from?
Well, I think there's a lot of similarities between Marquette and Duke, and I think it all goes back to the opportunity that a young man has when he commits to the school. Marquette is a place where you can get the best of all worlds. You know, you can get a first-class education and an amazingly supportive community and play at elite-level basketball. And if you look around the country, there's only a handful of places now where you can get all of those things at the very highest level, and Marquette's one of them. You know, in today's day and age of college athletics, where football is the driver, Marquette is one of the few schools where basketball is in the driver's seat. And I love that. And that's similar to the situation that I am coming from. And you know, I love the fact that the fabric of the school and the program are interwoven here at Marquette. I mean, it's for a basketball coach, you couldn't ask for anything more.
Your first meeting with your players, when you walked into the room for the first time, looked at them for the first time, what was the response that you got, and how has the relationship between you and your players grown?
Well, I think the relationship has grown a lot. You know, I always remember the first time you walk into a locker room and meet your new team. And obviously, that's a time of transition. I mean, those guys had gone through a very tough time. You know, anytime the coach who's recruited you and coached you leaves a program, you know, that's difficult. And I always try to put myself in the player's shoes. And so, you know, the very first thing that I wanted to do when I got the job was make them the number one priority and start developing a relationship with them and building back a trust and getting to know them. And, you know, you wonder if you're going to be accepted. I think I've not only been accepted by the players, I think I've been embraced by the players. And that's been, you know, a real fun thing for me.
Kind of the flip side of that is a number of potential freshmen that Coach Williams had recruited here, decommitted, looked somewhere else. When you come in as a new coach, what's the process that a coach goes through? Do you reach out to those recruits? Do you try to convince them that Marquette really is the place for them? How did you handle it?
Well, you do. You know, really, when there's coaching changes, very rarely do kids stay with the school that they committed to. I mean, that's just the way of college basketball. And what ends up happening is that you have a two-week period where there's no coaching. You know, Buzz had left and Marquette hadn't hired a coach. And so during that time, you know, there's a little bit of a feeding frenzy of anticipation of those kids moving on to the next spot. And so by the time you get the job and you're able to get in front of them or on the phone, you know, it's very difficult, and that's okay. You know, for me, I want guys who want to wear the jersey. I don't want to have to twist anybody's arm. I don't want to have to trick anybody. Marquette's a place where people should want to run to, and if that's not where you're at mentally or in your heart, then you know it's probably not the place for you. And I'm okay with those types of decisions.
Of course, you're competing with the University of Wisconsin, a school that had just gone to the Final Four, specifically as we're talking about recruiting right now. But, you know, your background in the ACC, your background at Duke University, when you think about where you would like to recruit players from, do you feel like you have an advantage, Marquette University perhaps in the state of Wisconsin, but your background specifically in ACC country, do you think that you can, do you feel like you want to expand the recruiting base of Marquette University?
Well, I think first and foremost, I think it needs to start with the kids in Wisconsin. I mean, I've been very impressed with the high school coaches, the AAU programs. These kids are getting coached at a very high level, and there's a lot of talent in the state. And so I want our recruiting base to start from there. And then really within a couple hours, you have some big time basketball areas, whether it's Chicago or Minneapolis. And so that is where it needs to start. But, you know, I'm fortunate of coming from a place that's recruited nationally. So I have contacts nationally, and hopefully we'll be able to use those here at Marquette to attract a real high level of kid.
Let's talk about rivalries for a moment, something certainly you know a lot about, having been at Duke with North Carolina just 6 miles down the road, maybe the best rivalry in all of sports. I think certainly most college basketball fans would acknowledge that it's the most, I guess, storied rivalry in college basketball. But down the road here at Marquette, now it's more than 6 miles, it's closer to 90, but you've got the Wisconsin Badgers, not in the same conference like Duke and North Carolina, obviously in the ACC, so it's a little bit different, but still, the in-state rivalry is one that Marquette fans and Wisconsin fans really get into, and that rival, the Wisconsin Badgers, coming off a Final Four run, that's their best season in four decades, a couple of generations. How much do you welcome going up against that kind of rival that has had that much success?
Oh, of course. I mean, I'm honored to be a part of the rivalry. I mean, when you have a rivalry, what ends up happening is both places end up getting better. You know, certainly the University of Wisconsin has an outstanding coach in Bo Ryan and a great program. And competing against them should make us better, and vice versa. And so I embrace it. And look, kids want to be a part of games like that. And so, you know, I think having that only helps. And, you know, I've walked in the shoes of somebody who's played in a big-time rivalry, and I've coached in a big-time rivalry. I think you approach rivalry with respect, with honor, and you do the rivalry the right way.
From someone who lived it, how intense is Duke, North Carolina?
Well, it's incredibly intense. I mean, it's incredibly intense. I mean, you want to win that game as bad as possible. But really what it does is it gives you a roadmap and a blueprint on how you should prepare for every game. You shouldn't prepare for a rivalry game differently than you do every other game. And if you can get into that mindset where you're preparing for each game like a championship game or a rivalry game, then you have a chance to really do some special things. And so that's where, you know, you can use the ability to play in big-time games to help your guys learn how to be consistently great.
As far as your guys, you know, Matt Carlino from BYU coming in, playing your position, point guard, I think there's still a lot of basketball fans that remember you as Duke's point guard slapping the floor, which I'm sure you've heard about your entire career. What did you see in Matt when he made the decision that he was reopening up where he wanted to go and play one final year of college basketball?
You know, Matt's a guy who's a proven winner. He's a guy who's played in NCAA tournaments and had a lot of success at the college level and experience. And so, you know, for us, you know, having him join our program is a huge thing. I think he will make the guys around him better. You know, he's just a very good all-around player. He can play with the ball in his hands. He can play off the ball. He's a terrific shooter. He's also a really good passer. And so he brings a lot of things to the table that will help our program immediately and that will make the people around him better.
As far as the players that you've got left, the players that you will go into next season with, what are some of the areas that you're hoping to improve on? What are some of the areas where you think that this team really is solid?
Well, you know, I think the one thing right away is these kids are used to working. And so you don't have to necessarily build a culture of work. You know, they're used to putting in an effort. I think, you know, what we are putting our effort to may be a little bit different. I really want to focus this summer on skill development, especially early in the summer where guys are getting better in their individual games, expanding their games, refining their games. And then at the end of the summer when we have our full complement of guys, using, you know, the time on the court that we're allowed to have, is start then building the team and the chemistry. So it's a huge summer for our program, and we need to make the best use of the time and, you know, really move forward and hopefully set up for a great year.
You come from a place, obviously, where anything less than a Final Four run, anything less than a national championship is looked at perhaps by the fans as, oh, okay, I mean, it was a good year, but the goals, the expectations are extraordinarily lofty, perhaps loftier than any other place in the country. What are the expectations that you have walking into this job, your first season at Marquette and then beyond?
Well, we have very high expectations, and the expectations that are going to drive our program are going to come from what's the internal, not the external. You know, obviously this is a program that's a winning program. It should win both on and off the court. It's a program that should compete for championships and be a player in March. And so those are the things that we want to get to. And, you know, obviously in transition, there, you know, how long that takes, I'm not sure. You know, my feeling it can happen sooner than later. And but certainly those are the goals for what we want to do here.
How close is this team, kind of in that same vein? Last season, a bit of a disappointment, but, you know, there's ebbs and flows certainly in college basketball. That's just kind of the nature of the game. Walking into this job, assessing this team as you have so far as the head coach, your first, you know, month or so on the job, how close is this team?
You know, I think this team, the guys are very close. You know, we lost a senior class that produced a lot on the court for them last year. But we have a lot of hungry guys who I think have something to prove. And we have to use that motivation this summer to get better. You know, I'll have a better feel for our team the longer I'm around them. The thing that I've been impressed with, though, I think they're hungry. I think they're anxious to work, and I think they're anxious to get better. And so if we can maintain that attitude through the summer and then through the season, I think this team can do some really good things.
What is your coaching style? Do you have a coaching style yet? I mean, you haven't been a head coach. There are some you know, maybe Andy Enfield now at USC, but at Florida Gulf Coast, the run up and down the floor type of style that he brought there, and that's what he's known for. Do you have a coaching style yet? Do you know what your coaching style is yet?
Well, I think, you know, first and foremost, we're going to be a team that competes and plays to win every time we step on the floor. And, you know, the things that we can control are effort, how well we play together, how smart we play. You know, I want to be a coach of a team that maximizes those areas. And then we have to figure out, based on our personnel, then how to best position them to win. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. You know, you can have a perfect scenario in how you want to play, but ultimately the coach is responsible for putting the kids in the best position individually and collectively to win. And I have to learn more about our team to figure out exactly what that's going to be. But the competition and the hunger to compete and the willingness to play hard and together, you know, those are non-negotiables.
Final thing for you, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about a player that you do know a lot about, and it's a player that a lot of folks in Milwaukee were really watching closely last year. That would be Jabari Parker. The Bucks will select with no worse than the fourth pick in the upcoming NBA draft. What can you tell us about Jabari if that is the selection that the Bucks do wind up ultimately making?
Well, first of all, if Jabari was chosen by the Bucks are getting a first-class person. I mean, he's a guy who's going to represent the organization and the city in a first-class manner. That's before you ever get to the fact that he's an extraordinarily talented basketball player who really is just scratching the surface of what he's eventually going to be. I have confidence that Jabari will reach his ultimate potential. One, because I think he wants to. That's something that's very important. He works at it, and he's got great core values. And so if the marriage of the Bucks and Jabari happens, the Bucks fans, the city of Milwaukee, the state of Wisconsin should be very, very excited.
And it wouldn't hurt that he'd have a familiar face, yeah, or a friendly face just up the road.
Yeah, no, and he can babysit my kids again, so that's good. So we would help try to make the transition really easy for him and give him a familiar face and a safe haven. It'd be pretty cool having Jabari around our program as well.
What kind of a babysitter is he?
he's a good one. You know, he's still a kid at heart. You know, he's a great guy. He's a great guy, and he would fit in really well in this type of community.
So that last part didn't exactly age well. Jabari Parker, good young man. He's had some bad luck. We know about the injuries, but he's been buried on the Sacramento Kings bench. He's only appeared in 3 games. I had to look it up. Now, he only appeared in 3 games this season. He got into just 6 games a year ago. He's bounced around from the Bucks to the Bulls to the Wizards to the Hawks, now the Kings. He's on the trading block again, as you might suspect. Really a rough road for someone who the Bucks invested a number 2 overall pick in, but I digress. This is about Steve Wojciechowski. I want to finish, though, with this for 3 reasons. Number 1, you probably don't have access to this audio otherwise beyond the 7 minutes available on YouTube, and I wanted you to have access to it if you're a Marquette fan. So that's number 1. Number 2, when the hell am I going to play this otherwise? And number 3, it's a podcast, so there aren't any rules as to how long this thing can go. So if you want to check out now, I get it. No harm, no foul, no points off or anything like that. But if you do want to listen to Steve Wojciechowski's full introductory news conference, here it is from April 1st, 2014.
I'm both honored and humbled to be standing before you today. And thank you all for being here. And thank you, John, Father Wild, Bill, and Dr. Lovell, for giving me this amazing opportunity. Marquette is a place that I've admired from a distance for a long time. And in the last few days, I've had a chance to experience it up close and personal. And it's exceeded every expectation. So to the administration, the faculty, the staff, thank you for creating a brand in Marquette University that is recognized both nationally and internationally. I also want to say thank you to the former coaches and the former players who've made an amazingly proud tradition that is Marquette basketball. I am honored to take the lead of this program and build it to amazing heights. The game of basketball has been incredibly good to me. It's taken me places that are beyond belief. But today I stand here, and this is the most proud day in my basketball life, being with you all, celebrating this day as the new men's head basketball coach at Marquette University. In a whirlwind couple days, there were things that I will always remember. And today, a moment that I will always remember is walking in to the locker room the first time and seeing my new team. I could not be more excited to get to work with these guys. You know, I did my research just as Marquette did on me, and everybody I talked to about the caliber of kids that were in the program raved about them. And I cannot wait to be around these guys on a day-to-day basis and build something together that can be special, meaningful, and last a lifetime. I am so fortunate to have a lot of tremendous role models that have helped me along the way. In basketball, there's been none bigger than Coach K and my experience at Duke University. What I've learned from him, both as a player and as a coach, has been invaluable. And he's allowed me to understand just how fun and incredible the game of basketball is, but when used the right way, how it can change your life. I hope to do that here at Marquette. I want our guys and our players to try to win every day. I want to win every day. And I want to win every day as basketball players. I want to win every day as students. And I want to win every day, most importantly, as people. And I think we can all get behind that. And so as I stand before you today, I could not be more excited to get that journey started, to get moving forward, to working with these guys, and start winning every day. And I'm so excited to be a part of a program that has an amazing fan base and enthusiasm and a thirst for being outstanding at the game of basketball. I cannot wait to get to know our students. I come from a place where the students at the university and the basketball team are one. And that's what I want to do here. We want our team to represent our student body, our alumni, and all the employees of the university in the very highest manner, and be a source of pride and growth and excitement when you watch us play, when you see us on campus, and do what we do. And so I'm excited to get to know our students as well. So lastly, but certainly not least, I want to thank my family. When I was being interviewed, I told the people at Marquette, the most important thing to me is my family. And this reason felt right. This decision for me felt right for a lot of obvious reasons from a basketball standpoint and from a standpoint of being a part of a great university and a great university community. The thing that put it over the top was the support of my wife and my two boys. And so I'd like to thank them for joining me today. And we cannot wait for the Wojciechowski family. Don't worry, you will not be tested on the spelling. It's like, where's your Howski, but put Woj on front, okay? One of the things that Coach told me yesterday when I was talking to him, he said, you know, you can get a lot better Polish food in Milwaukee than you could have ever gotten in Durham, North Carolina. So we can't wait for our family to join yours and for your family to join ours. And with that, I would like to open up any questions that you may have.
Coach, Doug Russell with WTMJ Radio here in Milwaukee. When you compare and contrast your experience at Duke University to what you see here at Marquette, how do the two compare specifically, Duke versus Marquette?
Well, I see a lot of similarities. One, it's a great school that can attract kids who want the best of all worlds. They want the best of the world of education. They want to be educated, and they want to be around other character-driven people. You can also have the best of basketball. The past has proven that. It's been done here, and it can be done again. And that's something, for me, that's incredibly exciting. And that's one of the big reasons why, after a long time at Duke and being a part of a special place, that I felt in my heart that Marquette University was the right place for both me and my family.
Michael Hunt with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Have you been able this morning to talk to some of the signed recruits, the incoming freshmen, and maybe their feedback?
Well, I have not yet, and if I took you through the last 24 hours, it's been a whirlwind, and I didn't officially get the job until this morning, where the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed. And as I told these guys today, my number one priority are these guys, and I will be in contact with the guys who are committed and have said they want to play as soon as possible. Right away. But, understand that these young men behind me have gone through a very hard transition. One of the things I'm fortunate at being a former player and a guy who's played at a lot of different levels and gone through things, the transition of losing a coach is a difficult one. And so the number one thing I need to do is work right away to build a great relationship with the young men behind me, so we have the same vision for what's going to be going on moving forward. And I want to include in that the guys who have signed and committed to play here. And so that is my priority over the next couple days, and I will be working tirelessly at that.
Steve, Dennis Krause from Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. Besides the comment about Polish food, what's Coach K's biggest advice to you as you take over here?
Well, when I called Coach this morning, my first question to him was if he had any interest in being my associate head coach and doing halftime interviews. Surprisingly, he said no. He said I couldn't afford him, which is very, very true. The advice that Coach gave me was to be myself. He believes in Marquette. What he told me about the university, about the program, could not have been more complimentary. And obviously, he is a person that I lean on heavily in all the decisions I make. And to hear him speak so glowingly about the program, its history and tradition, but also about its potential going forward, was incredibly exciting. I think the thing that most excited me about what he said is he talked about the quality of people at this university. And for as many great things that he's done at Duke, and certainly Duke has done for him, if you talk to him, he would say it is a result of the quality of people that are there and are on his team, both players, staff, administration, and the university as a whole. So all of those things, after I got over the fact that he wasn't going to be the associate head coach, rang clear and loudly to me.
Coach, with Coach K now turning you down, you do have the opportunity to build your own staff. What are your philosophies going to be about building your own staff, and what kind of a timeline are you looking at?
Well, I want to have a great staff. I think it's of huge importance, and I want to move quickly, but I want to be smart about it. I want to get guys who will fit with who I am as a person, compliment me for where I am as a coach, and make these guys better. I want guys who will dive into the game of basketball and dive into relationships to help our guys reach their full potential, both individually and collectively. And so I have people in mind. You know, I'm not prepared to talk about them at this point because it's a moving process. But the hiring of a staff obviously is of utmost importance, and I want to move quickly, but I want to do it to where we're getting the best staff, not at the expense of moving quickly.
Coach, Rod Burks, WTMJ, great. NBC Television. Can you take us through those last 24 hours, and what was that moment like when they said, would you like the job?
It was incredible. It's overwhelming. The college coaching profession is an incredible profession. But the decision timelines that you have to make life-altering decisions, are very unusual. And so the last 24 hours, there's been a wide spectrum of emotions. Excitement, anxiety, tears of joy, tears of sadness because we're going to be leaving a place that we love. But at the end of the day, we kept coming back to, it just felt right. And I'm a guy who has always tried to do things with my heart, for better or worse. It's usually worked out for the better. And it just feels right.
Coach Mitch Nellis, I'm back ESPN Milwaukee,
great.
Home of the Golden Eagles, so welcome.
I
don't know if the guys in the back row remember this, but a lot of us who've watched college basketball remember a young point guard slapping the floor on defense and getting after it, being pretty a fiery personality. How do you bring that grittiness and fire that you had as a player to the head coaching position?
Well, I am who I am, and it goes back to being myself. I think I'm as competitive as they come. I love the game of basketball, and I think it should be played a certain way. And the number one way it should be played is hard all the time. If we're going to try to do things big, we have to make big investments. And the investment is not just a physical investment. It's an emotional investment, and it's an investment of your heart. And that's the way I tried to play. And again, it served me well. I don't know if I can get down low enough to be slapping the floor. I'm going to have to have these guys do that for me. I certainly remember those days as well.
Homer, 540 ESPN. The assumption as an assistant at Duke is that you've had many other opportunities to be a head coach. Is it true? Did you ever come close to leaving before? And why now?
I have had other opportunities, and I may have come close maybe one other time. Why now? Because I think Marquette is the perfect place for me and my family to make this step. Duke has been great for me. It's a place where I grew up. I have amazing relationships, and it's a place that made me better every day. So I wasn't going to leave for just any job. I was only going to leave for a job that I thought is the perfect job for me. And I feel like Marquette is that place. And that's why I'm so excited about it. If you talk to people about me, I'm a very loyal guy. And I have amazing loyalty to the university and to Coach K. And I can't wait to have that same loyalty to Marquette and this program.
Coach. Chris Linskins, ESPNU and WMUR Sports. First of all, I want to say welcome to Milwaukee and Marquette. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
What was the first thing that you said to the guys? You mentioned walking into the locker room and feeling so much excitement. What was the first thing that you told all your guys when you walked into that locker room for the first time?
Well, I told them I can't wait to get to work. My favorite place is the locker room. And so when I walked in, I tried to go up to all of them and give them a hug and tell them that I can't wait to get to work with them. But I also understand where they're coming from. You know, my priority is to work on the relationships that they have here. I want the players to trust me. And I think trust is built by telling the truth and doing your best every day. And that was my promise to them, that I will always tell them the truth, that they will get my best every day. And the deal is, I will expect them to give me their best. And if we can do that one simple thing, then some really terrific things can happen for all of us.
Coach, Jim Ozarski on Milwaukee.com. You mentioned investment and the perfect place for you. In your research, Mark, how important was that investment in basketball, that basketball is sort of the flagship athletic program in this university?
Well, it's huge. I mean, Marquette's a basketball school. I mean, that's, you know, obviously the university, there's amazing things going on all over the university. In the classroom, in research, in a lot of different ways. But the fact that basketball's big in the culture of the university and woven into the fabric of who the university is played a huge role. I'm coming from a place like that where it's a basketball school. People are excited. It's important to them. People are passionate. They want to see teams that win, but win the right way. And so there's not a lot of those schools out there. You know, if you think around the country where you look at a school and say, you know what, when you talk about the fabric of that university, the basketball program is a huge part of it. When you look at Marquette, you can say that. And to me, that was incredibly attractive.
Coach Tom Pippins from Fox TV in Milwaukee, welcome to you and Lindsay and Jack and Charlie, and hope you just love the experience on and off the court.
Thank you.
I was interested to read that you're a first-generation college student in your family. Can you talk to me about the drive? What shaped you as a young man that gave you all the success you've had as a husband and father, as a coach, and certainly as a player to get to this point today, please?
Well, you know, I've been fortunate to be on a lot of great teams, and the best team I've ever been on is the Wojciechowski team. You know, when people look at Duke, they think of an elite school, and they may look at me and say, you know, I'm a person of privilege and all that kind of stuff. Look, I'm the son of a longshoreman and a homemaker who didn't go to college. But what I learned from them is more important than what you could possibly learn in any classroom. And so my parents are amazing. And I would wish that every kid would have parents that set the example and walk the walk like my folks did. And one of the reasons I love coaching is not because I'm going to replace a father or a mother or parents, but because you can shine that example in a different way but have a similar impact. And so I think about that all the time. One of the things I have in my house is my dad's hard hat that he used to wear to work every day. And because he showed up to work every day. And that's what I'm going to do. And that's what I'm going to expect the people around me to do. And I don't like to overcomplicate it. You know, in today's day and age of college basketball, everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel a little bit. And ultimately, you know, simple things that are tried and true over the test of time work. And that's you show up to work every day, you do your job, you do it to the best of your ability, and see where the chips fall.
Steve, based on Marquette's recent head coaching history, right or wrong, it's kind of been perceived as a stepping stone job. I was just wondering about your philosophy and your commitment to go about changing that perception.
Well, you know, that was a question that was asked to me during the interview process. And, you know, my sole focus is on Marquette. I didn't leave the job I was at working for the guy I did at my alma mater to go to a place that I couldn't see my family at for an incredibly long time. Now, hopefully I'm a good enough coach where they won't be running me out of town. But I believe in the place. If my track record is any indication, I stayed at Duke for 15 years. I could have left a lot over the last 10 years. But when a place feels like home for me and a place is good for my family, then that's a place I'm going to stick with and stick to.
Coach Stephanie Sutton from WI Central here in Milwaukee. I know you're new to Milwaukee and Wisconsin in the Midwest. I just want to know how much you know about the rivalry between Marquette and Wisconsin, and your rivals right now are in the Final Four, and how badly you want to get this team back to the Final Four.
Well, fortunately, I come from a place where rivalries are a very familiar topic. So having a rival is not anything new to me. And I love it. And the thing that I think is so healthy is that it should be a rivalry that's built on respect. We have a great program at Marquette University. I respect the program that they have at Wisconsin and what Coach Ryan has done there. That doesn't mean when the ball goes up in the air, there's going to be anybody who wants to win that game worse. And rivalries make you better because they keep you on your toes, they keep you competitive, and they keep you hungry and striving for more. So I love having the opportunity to continue to be a part of a rivalry that people care about, and it's exciting to me.
Steve, Mike Sanciel, MUTV Sports. You spent your playing and coaching career at Duke and in the ACC. What are your thoughts on coming to Marquette and now coaching in the Big East?
Oh, I love it. The fact that it's a basketball conference, I love that. I mean, and I don't know how you couldn't love that if you're a basketball coach. You know, a lot of times things are driven so much in today's day and age by football. To come to a place where basketball is the thing, where there's so many storied traditions and great schools, is something that I'm incredibly excited about. So I look at the conference as a real positive in my decision making, and I can't wait to be a part of it. I have great respect for the schools in the conference and the coaches in the conference, and I'm honored to be a part of that fraternity right now.
Coach Mark Strotman, PaintTouches.com. In terms of X's and O's, how closely do you want to model what Coach K, yourself, and the assistants at Duke have done? And also, I guess, the second part, how much do advanced statistics play a role in your game planning and how you go about coaching these guys?
Well, number one, I hope we model ourselves enough where we're hanging banners and winning, you know, conference championships and all the things that we were able to do at Duke. And obviously, Coach has a huge impact on what I believe in basketball, and it starts with defense first. Not only that, that's who I was as a player. I believe defense is what wins championships. And really good defense should lead to offense and exciting and fast play. We have to figure out how our group is in a position to win every game against who we're competing against. And so ultimately, that's my job. In a perfect world, I want to play aggressive defense I want to create offense from our defense, and I want to play a fun and fast attacking style of offense. And I think that's how kids want to play. And that's how I, you know, that's how I wanted to play. That's how I did play. And that's how I would like our team and our group here at Marquette to play. Analytics, I think, are important. When you think about what's important into building a winner, I think analytics is a very important piece to the puzzle. I don't think it's the end all be all. I think it's another resource that you should use, and if it can give you that extra edge to win, then great. But I'm not going to base my decisions solely on analytics, but it will be a piece of the puzzle.
All right, there you have it. April 1st, 2014, Steve Wojciechowski's introductory news conference at Marquette University. And look, Steve Wojciechowski's a good man, and he's someone who represented Marquette University extraordinarily well, but in a results-driven business, the results weren't there. So who's up next? We'll find out in due time, but we'll certainly be talking about it here on the show. That's it for this special breaking news edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next time.